Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of IBC Topics. Today's guest is Andrew Kim. Hey Andrew.
Hey Gabe, how you doing?
Doing good, good. So as we do with all our episodes, we just want to really start off highlighting testimonies. And so we would love to just hear your testimony, how you came to faith. If you want to share a couple of people that have greatly impacted you in your spiritual walk, how you met Helen, your wife. And lastly, how you ended up at IBC.
Wow. Yeah, just first of all, I just want to thank you for even hearing me out. And, you know, everyone has a life story. And, yeah. You know, as I get older, I realize that my story is getting longer and longer. hopefully it's not too long and that it's beneficial to some people that are hearing. Yeah. So, starting from the beginning, I think it'll just kind of make a little bit more sense who I am. But like, you know, I immigrated to the United States when I was 1.5 years old, lived in Cape Town, for most of my life. And, you know, parents took me to church at a pretty young age. You know, went to Christian schools, until high school and like elementary school. I went to Noah's Ark Christian School in Vermont in Third and, you know, had a great time. And so I was brought up like, you know, learning, you know, Sunday school stories and, you know, reading the Bible and things like that. But, you know, I think when I went to college, you know, I really, you know, stopped going to church. Like, so for 4 or 5 years, I decided, I don't know why, but I just, you know, didn't go to church on Sundays, stopped attending. And it was an interesting time in my life where I was trying to find out who I was, like in terms of my identity, as an Asian American man, as just a, you know, an American. I mean, just, you know, these kinds of questions, a Christian, and just kind of experimenting and just trying to figure out like what it is to be an adult, really. Mm-hmm. And the Lord really, let me experience what it's like to be outside his presence when I decided to kind of like go my own way. Mm-hmm. In a lot of, and you know, my mom, who is a strong believer, a woman of God, and she a prayer warrior in a lot of ways, and she would call me every Sunday morning and ask me like, hey, are you going to church? Mm-hmm. And I would always lie to her because it was easier for me to lie to her and say, yeah, Mom, I'm going, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Than to explain to her why I'm not going, you know? Yeah. So, I just lived this like double life in a lot of ways. You know, but, you know, because of her, I know the power of a mom's prayer, a mother's prayer, and that, because of her, just resilience. She knew. She must have known. Why would she call me every Sunday morning, you know? If she knew I was like going to church. But God's relentless pursuit of me when I was a sinner, it's so like real to me. That I'm a recipient of his unmerited grace. You know, you know, during that time in college, like, you know, I experienced a lot of things, you know, hung out, you know, went to parties and, you know, joined a Asian American fraternity, you know, did a lot of things, that people would say, oh, that's just a college experience or whatever. You know, did a lot of worldly things. And I just remember this one time where, I think it was a summer prior to me coming to know Christ, truly. You know, I remember going to this, my friend's like, hey, let's go to this desert rave. It's going to be so fun. And I was like, all right, let's go. And, you know, we went and, you know, I just remember, it's weird because I remember what happened there, but like at the same time, it was like a blur. And I just remember just kind of climbing up to like this, on top of the speaker somehow on stage, and just someone gave me some glow sticks, and I was just up there, and I was like, oh, there's the sun. What? You know, and the sun came up, and I'm still like up there, and I'm going, wow, time flies. But, you know, during this time, there was someone who had like jumped off. Like the rave was like right by the side of this mountain or this cliff, and somebody jumped off, you know, probably, you know, thinking that they could fly. And I just remember that time thinking, that could be me, you know, eventually. I don't want to like make the impression I was like this druggy kid or anything like that. You know, I wasn't really that, you know, but, you know, I did a little bit. But majority of it was just, I was just in sin, and I just kind of lived my life the way I wanted to live it. And I just didn't, really put in God's input into my life. And I never followed his agenda for my life. And it kind of got to that point. And I remember driving home, and we stopped by this gas station, and going in to the bathroom, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I saw my face. And I finally like looked at myself, and I told myself, this is exactly how I felt on the inside. What I look on the outside was just like my face was covered in dust and dirt, and, you know, just dirt in my nostrils and just everything. And I just knew, like, I remember coming back to the fraternity house and going, hey, where's that business card I found? Some pastor gave me like 2 weeks ago. And I kept in my wallet for some reason. And I was like, I'm going. And, you know, I grabbed two of my frat brothers, and I was like, hey, let's go to church. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Dude, hey man, it's like 8 o'clock. Let's go to church, you know, 8 o'clock, whatever. Just take a shower real quick. Let's go. Yeah, just come by. I just feel like we need to go to church. And then they came with me, but like, I don't know. I'm really good with directions, but like, I guess, you know, that day it wasn't meant to be. We couldn't find it. Like, couldn't find the church. I had the map, and I still couldn't find it. It was weird. We're just walking around UCLA, cause it was around there, but, and we just ended up eating lunch and came back home. But like, about a week or two later, you know, I just went by myself. And at that time, I don't even know what the sermon was about. I was ready because, you know, I had the fortune of, you know, my parents giving me, a Christian, like, education and, you know, teaching me, like, who Christ was. And so I already knew, like, that was the only answer that I needed to give my life to Christ. Like, I've tried my own, ways, and it didn't work. And all it did was make me, further, like depressed, further in darkness, and further, just like purposeless and just going through life. And so I gave my life to Christ then, and it was, a transformative experience for me. Like people that knew me at that time were like, what's going on with you? You know, I remember the first thing I did was I went to the warehouse with like my box full of like CDs, and, I had Nas, you know, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, you know, all my CDs. And I don't know if you know what the warehouse is.
Like, oh, I totally know. I totally know.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah. And I just remember going up to the counter, and I was like, hey, I want to sell all my CDs. And then the guy at the counter is like, you're going to sell this one? And he's looking through it and go, I'm going to take that. I was like, yeah. He said, why are you doing this? And I said, I met Jesus, man. I don't need these anymore, you know? And then literally, like, I took that money, and I went straight to the Christian bookstore back when we used to have Christian bookstores. And I, like, just bought everything that I could. Like, I was like, wow, look, I want a Jesus sticker. I want this fish sticker. You know, I want this book. I was like, oh, I didn't even know any authors, nothing. I just bought a bunch of worship CDs, hymnals, Bibles. I have like, you know, 15 different type of Bibles. I didn't know which was the best, so I just bought like different versions. you know, I didn't know who, like, you know, in terms of like Christian authors, like who I should be reading. So I, you know, picked up like Max Lucado, or I picked these up, or whoever it was, you know, and just started reading and just, yeah, trying to get that into me. And, I remember putting my, a fish sticker on my truck, the front and the back. And I remember saying, God, you know how I'm, how much I love this truck. And people who know me before, like, they know I love that, that truck. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and just putting it on there and saying, this is your truck now, God. And, you know, so whatever you need this, truck for, like in terms of ministry, if people ask me for it, I'm not going to say no. And, yeah, God really used that willingness, for a lot of different types of ministries. I met Helen, through the church that, I decided to go to, right when I came to the Lord on August, 30th, 1998. And she was actually part of this USC ministry, outreach ministry. And so I always joke with her. I was like, that was missionary dating, you know, because, while I was at USC, she was there, and she, that's how, you know, I found out about that church was, because that church had a an outreach at USC, and and I remember you know, kind of giving my testimony about, you know, how I met the Lord and how my I'm giving my life to Christ and what I'm doing. And from that point on, like, you know, we just started having a friendship. And eventually, actually, that was a crazy year, because I came to church August of 1998. We got engaged. No, our first date was February 15th, 1999. We got engaged in May and got married in October of 1999. So it was like so fast, you know. Within a, like a year's time of us meeting together, we got married. I wouldn't. It worked for us, but I don't know if I could. You know, recommend that for most people. Yeah, we always joke actually that like we've been married for 20 years now, 20th anniversary, that's October. And, we always say we've been happily married for 18 because the first and last year was it's been rough. Yeah. But, it was interesting too, because like when Helen, August 30th, that day, I don't know if it's coincidence or whatever, she was at, in Vietnam missions. She had gone to a missions trip, and there she had, you know, just praying to God. And she's just like, all right, I'll marry, if you want me to, I'll marry a guy who's younger than me. 'Cause Helen and I we're like 4 years apart. And there's like two weeks where we're five, and she says she better, I better treat her really good during those couple of weeks. But, so she's like, all right, I'll marry, you know, I'll be okay with that. And then the other thing she said was, okay, I'll marry a Kim too. 'Cause I was like, she was dead set of never marrying a Kim for some reason. I don't know why. Then I showed up August 30th, you know, at church. But, yeah. So after we got married, you know, Helen and I, we, led a young adult small group together, and then we led a USC outreach, campus outreach. And it was an interesting time, 'cause like, I felt like God was like, in a way, restoring the years that the locust has eaten. I like that verse, because it really speaks to me. Even though I might be proof texting that verse or whatever, but I just felt like it was really kind of applicable to me, because like the years that I spent kind of being an evangelist for the enemy, let's say, God was allowing me to, reach out to the campus that, I had, you know, just kind of lived a worldly life, and the people that were there that experienced and knew me as a person of the world got to see me, my life changed for Christ, you know, and, I just remember like, you know, our fraternity, the Gamma Epsilon Omega, the Gammas, we had this bench in front of Tommy Trojan. And, you know, we you know, always like had somebody at the bench. And so like in between classes, we would, you know, just go hang out at the bench and just chill there. And, you know, we would just, everybody knew that was just where all the Asian frat boys, you know, hung out or whatever. And, I just remember like when God, allowed us to kind of, you know, have this college ministry, just standing in front of Tommy Trojan in the middle of the quad area and just handing out flyers, for our campus outreach and trying to meet people and, you know, going over to the bench and inviting my fraternity members to our campus outreach. And it was just a really interesting experience where I got a chance to, share the gospel, to a lot of my, college friends. But then at the same time experience, you know, some rejection too, and being not, you know, just trying to understand what that meant, you know, Christ experienced rejection as well. But, you know, but me, I just felt really stubborn and I just wanted to reach everybody. I remember one time also I made all these flyers and I posted all the flyers on the walls of the fraternity house. And I said, Gamma, it's a Gamma Sunday. You know, church day, you know, and I just made I didn't even ask anybody. I just like posted all over the house. Like it was like maybe 30 flyers all over, like in the bathroom, over, like in front of the urinals, everything. And saying, tomorrow's going to be Gamma, like church day. Everybody, you know, whoever wants to come with me, you can come, right? Nobody came. And then literally like an hour after I posted all of those like flyers on the Gamma, the house. Our fraternity house, it was like torn down, you know, by somebody. I don't know who. I won't find out. No, but yeah, it's just, you know, just kind of like not understanding in a lot of ways. But I mean, it just showed like my passion for the gospel. But then I did it in a way where it was like abrasive too. But I was learning. I might have made some enemies. I don't know. But I just, you know, a lot like what I did at the warehouse, like I decided to just kind of, I felt like I needed to just replace the things of the world with the things of Christ. I remember just even like, you know, the groomsmen that I decided to choose, when we got married, Helen and I got married, I was like, I gotta have all Christian like groomsmen, even though I just met these guys, you know, these are my Christian brothers, even though we've only known each other for a year, I feel closer. And in a lot of ways, it was true. You know, I look back and I go, I don't even talk to that guy anymore. You know, but it's like, but I kind of like, you know, I was young and you know, I wanted to like just live for Christ 100%, and that just kind of like showed that way. I probably made a lot of mistakes that, you know, just in hindsight might have like rub people the wrong way, but you know, I just felt like I just needed to, like, Jesus could come back tomorrow. I needed to reach everybody. And so I think like part of that was like deciding to go to ministry. And so I felt like, hey, you know, if I want to like live for Christ, I might have to be a pastor, you know. And so, you know, just going to seminary, deciding which seminary to go to, and then you know, what type of ministry I wanted to be in. And so, you know, I just remember at that time, like needing and wanting to like serve the youth. And so, you know, it was after this ministry that we used to, partner up with, called, Living Hope. And we reached out to like inner city kids in Watts, and, we would take them. Like every Saturday we would tutor them, and then in the summers we would take them up to like Lake Arrowhead and Big Bear, and just like and just kind of like have like a little camp. We call it Camp Jubilee. It was an awesome time, and then also just kind of volunteering as a VBS teacher for in Loup, Arizona, in the Navajo Nation. And so just kind of feeling like at that time I was like, wow, I want to be a teacher. I want to work with youth. I want to dedicate my life to to working with youth, you know, to let them know about Jesus, you know. I think that's the time where it kind of came. But I enrolled in seminary, went into teaching, and then Helen and I, we started reaching out to like kids in our area. It's interesting because IBC used to be in Santa Monica, and our former church used to be in Santa Monica too. And like we felt called to like lead a youth ministry. We had zero youth at the time at the church, because I think the oldest kid was maybe like in elementary school, third grade. And so we were like, okay, you know what? They're not here. We're going to go find them. And so we invited all these kids, sent out flyers, newsletters, everything like that. We formed a team, and like nobody from Santa Monica came, like nobody in that area. I got a mailer. I sent out like 1,000 like mail pieces to like that surrounding area. The kids that came, were in Chatsworth, La Crescenta, Downey. What in the world? And these kids really wanted to come. And so like, you know, we convinced the church to buy us from these like these minivans and stuff. And so we bought these like vans, and we would take these vans and pick all these kids up, come back to Santa Monica, have our youth ministry, then drop them off, and then bring the vans back, and then get home at like past midnight every Saturday. Yeah. But, that was pretty interesting. But God was faithful, and those kids, like, you know, a lot of them, I mean, I'm still serving with some of these kids, you know, that, that used to be in initial ministry. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, yeah. So how did we end up in IBC? I think that was the question, right?
Yeah.
So when we were at Cornerstone Church, prior to IBC, led by Francis Chan at that time, Francis had like started this like new initiative of like house churches, house church movements. And we led a house church at our house in Chatsworth, and invited like the community, like whoever in the community. I remember like there were people that were homeless that would come to our meetings at one point, and just like it was just open to anyone who wanted to come. And so we did that for about 2.5 years, and you know, even after like Francis had left up to San Francisco. And we were like the last home church left, you know, because he had established a bunch in the San Fernando Valley, and we were like the last ones left. And I remember Cornerstone had asked us if we wanted to just kind of start our church, you know, out here and just plant a church. And, you know, we really prayed about it, and we're like, no, I don't think we're called to full-time ministry in that way. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we just kind of like folded. We just had people just kind of go back to we called it the mothership, and other ministries in the area. And yeah, it was kind of like after that, we went back to the mothership, and it was hard because like the people that we knew, they had already all kind of left, and we didn't know anyone anymore, like in the big church in Simi. And so we tried that for about, you know, a year or two, and it was hard because like Helen and the kids were not plugged in, and I was completely plugged in men's ministries, leadership, whatever. And, but like they weren't, I was growing, but they weren't. And so that was kind of, yeah, it wasn't good for the whole family in that sense, because they weren't fully connected. I remember asking Isaac, "Hey man, like, do you have any friends here?" He's like, "No." And, you know, asking Isabella, "Do you have any friends here?" "No, we've been here for like, you know, almost a decade, and you don't have any friends. What's going on?" And so that led to a period of like a desert period where we just kind of like hopped a bunch of different places in the valley. Mm-hmm. I think we went to every church in the valley, you know, at least once. Mm-hmm. And then the church that we went to the most was the church of Target, because yeah, like we would drop off my kids at my mom's church, because they didn't have an English ministry, but they had an English speaking, like youth group ministry, or like a kids ministry that, And then we would just go up the street and just kind of have like Bible study on our own. Mm. And we did that for, you know, some time. And while, you know, in the midst of it, just kind of like, you know, checking out different churches here and there. Mm-hmm. And then eventually we're like, okay, we knew about IBC. We had sent our kids to like IBC VBS. Mm. I mean, they went to every VBS. Like, we were the VBS hoppers, like, in the summertime. So we knew every, like, VBS that was happening. And one of them happened to be the IBC. And we also knew a lot of IBC families from MPAC, which is Mission to Promote Adoption of Kids. And we knew a lot of families from that. And so we're like, okay, this is, like, the last church. If it doesn't work at IBC, like, we're in trouble. And then, so we decided to come. It was like an Easter Sunday a few years ago. And yeah, we came ever since then.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been awesome. It's been great. We love it here.
Mm. So you were talking about MPAC. And I do know that you're involved in another ministry that's really close to your heart. So if you could just share with us some of the ministries that you're involved in and also what they do and like what your role is in those ministries.
For sure. So like as a youth pastor, a former youth pastor, you know, I think that heart for the youth has always been present. I feel like it has been an important part of my life. And also Helen's. I mean, there was always, like, even when I was a youth pastor, I was always trying to think of ways to reach out to kids. Mm. Like, you know, I designed a skate park. I remember having the blueprints and giving it to the church. I was like, hey, can I build this and just have in the parking lot, like, during the week? Cause they're like, we don't have anything during the week, but these kids are using our parking lot. And, it, you know, every other day I'm like kicking them out, but they're coming. But we're kicking them out off our property. Hey, maybe I could just build this half pipe. And they're like, nah, we're going to just. And then I was like, all right. I remember one time that like our wall got graffiti. I was like, okay, what if we build a graffiti wall, you know, for people to just, you know, have some sort of like artistic expression. We're like, nah, we don't want to like,
encourage
that's not going to work. Encourage like vandalism and whatever. Yeah. And so like, I was like, okay, what can I do that will get the okay from the church, you know? So I was like, all right, we're going to make banana night, you know, where we're just going to have everything themed bananas. Everybody dress up as a banana. Like all of our games are banana. We're going to just eat bananas for dessert, and, you know, all this. And it was so popular. It was so amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and so we would have all these like food theme, like we had egg night and we just kind of like went with it, you know? kids would come, but they wouldn't stay. Like they would bring their friends. And so that was like our outreach was like, hey, just bring your friends. But then like we never went to their friends. Like we would only know them in our setting, like inside the walls of our church. And so I remember, you know, the benefit of being a teacher at Chatsworth at that time and a coach there was that I got a chance to always be reminded that there are other kids other than Christian churched kids that are out there. I just remember, you know, just a daily reminder of this huge harvest field every time I step foot on the campus as a teacher and a coach, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids weren't coming to my youth group. I mean, some were. There was a group of them, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. And I knew the youth pastors in the area, you know, that go to Rocky Peak or, you know, Shepherd of the Hills, and other churches. They weren't going to, I mean, a lot of them weren't going to there. Mm-hmm. So where were they going? So like out of the 3,000 students that were just at Chatsworth High School, I would say over 90% didn't go to church. Mm-hmm. And so where are they going? You know, who's reaching out to them? They aren't coming to my youth group. So, the verse, you know, Matthew 28:18 that really hit me, constantly. And I remember ending this, like we used to end this like at our youth meetings, like every, like that was our benediction. It was like, everybody said Matthew 28:18 mm-hmm. to 20, which is, you know, Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. And we would just always end our meetings like that, you know, our youth meetings. And, but we weren't really doing it. Like, I was telling the kids to do it, but I wasn't. My volunteers weren't doing that either. And so, that's when, at that time, it was like, I was taking some classes at Fuller, that really impacted me too. Oh, by the way, I accidentally told you guys like what seminary I went to, and now you guys are see, I wasn't planning on saying, I was just going to just ambiguous, like seminary, and then you would have to guess what seminary it was, but I'll just say it. Okay. I'll just be out all out there. Yeah, I went to Fuller. Okay. But there was this class. It was an introduction to urban ministries. It was led by Joe Coletti, and it was pretty amazing experience. Like all of our experiences and like class projects were reflections and what we had to do. He would assign us, you need to go and walk amongst the poor or the homeless, or go to an AA meeting and just sit there and just listen and interact with them, you know? Like, what in the world class did I get myself involved in? And so just like, you know, going to like Skid Row, parking my car, you know, and just, you know, sitting next to a homeless person and, you know, at the LA missions and just sitting there for like, you know, the whole day and just trying to see what it's like, you know, things like that. You know, going to an AA meeting and just standing up and saying, hi, my name is Andrew. I'm not an alcoholic, but I just want to just kind of share with you guys, like what's happening. You know, it just, it's just, it was just an interesting thing. And so that class really impacted me, taught me about like, this thing, it's like a concept called incarnational solidarity, which is, I can explain that later, but, and then I also attended this, lecture by, Chief Bernard Malekian. He was the chief of police, in Pasadena at that time. And he had this lecture called, reduction of gang violence and elimination of youth homicides. And I was always wondering, like, you know, what leads to kids joining gangs and like getting, you know, violent and doing things like tagging walls, and stuff like that. And I remember him saying something crazy and I was like, wow, it really impacted me. And at that lecture, he said that, gang members, there's only 5 to 10% that are really inclined to violence. But the rest are just functioning in the environment where they are. And he attended, so like he basically asked this question, that actually before he asked that question, he's like, you know, youth, they join gangs because they crave a sense of order. They want to belong to something greater than themselves. They want to have an identity. They want to be known. They want, you know, to be loved and cared for. I mean, I'm like, they want to matter. They want to make a difference. I'm like, they just need to know Jesus. You know, that was like my conclusion. It's like these kids join gangs because they don't know the church hasn't brought the gospel to them. And they haven't been loved on by the youth group that so many of our Christian kids have been blessed to be able to be part of, you know? And at the end, I remember him asking this question. It was like, he said, and this was an audience full of future pastors, right? And he said, is the main role of a pastor to be behind the pulpit or on the street? And I was like, I don't know. Give me the answer. And he was like, I remember going up to him at the end. I said, should I be on the behind the pulpit or on the street? I asked him, I said, you gave me the question, should I? He was like, I can't answer that for you. You know, because in a lot of ways we need both. But for me, it deeply struck me. And it was instrumental in my decision to like, you know, turn the corner and just go full time into education. And so, during that time, we were transitioning our youth ministry to be more outwardly focused. And so I was equipping our volunteers to we're going to now go to where the kids are, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're going to like wherever the kids are, we need to be there. We can't expect them to walk into our church. It's not going to happen. They're not coming. Like, we've done this for like 6 years. They haven't been coming. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go and get them. And so, that's when we started partnering with Young Life. We didn't have a Young Life in the Valley. It hasn't been one. And so, we partnered up with Young Life, and, now with Young Life, we're in Chatsworth High School. We used to be in Voss, Reseda High School. We're at Lawrence Middle School, led by a former, a track athlete of mine. And, we're going to be at Hale Middle School. We have a ministry towards special needs students or kids called Capernaum. We have a ministry to teen moms called Young Lives, and we had a Young Lives presentation at IBC recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just started last year College Life at CSUN, which is led by a former youth ministry student of mine. His name's Yujit Wu. And it's pretty amazing. And all our vision is just go where they are,
mm-hmm.
love on them, regardless of what the response is, still care about people. You know, even if they say no to Jesus, just be in the lives of our youth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm a sponsor and a coach for, FCA and I coach for FCA camps, at UCLA, every summer. And we have monthly FCA Valley coaches meetings. So FCA, we have a club on campus at Chatsworth, and led by my son Isaac. He's awesome. A captain. Yeah.
Awesome.
For FCA, and it's been pretty cool being able to partner with my oldest at Chatsworth, reaching his friends and for Christ there as well. And then lastly, I'm on the board of directors for MPACT, which is the mission to promote adoption of kids. And so Helen and I are regional directors for the Valley. And as you know, all of our beautiful three kids have been adopted from South Korea. And so we've been active trying to promote adoption and working to meet the needs of thousands of orphans in Korea and now in China as well. So just kind of serving in the least of these. We're trying to serve the least of these. Yeah. Mm.
So the last we get to, I guess, the last section. I mean, is there, it could be, it's just anything that's in your heart. Last words of kind of encouragement to the audience. Could be, you know, one of your favorite Bible verses or just kind of words of encouragement.
I mean, my favorite verse is, Matthew 6:33, and that's kind of what I live my life on. It's kind of my life verse, which is, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. The second verse that I live on is I actually made a little, sticker and put it on our kitchen wall, and to remind me that this is what the Lord requires of me. And so that's from Micah 6, 8, and which is, what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And COVID has reminded me of the brevity of life. James states that our life is like a mist.
Mm.
It comes and then it just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just another reminder that how temporary our life is, even though it seems like it's a long thing, but it's not, you know, in when you compare it to eternity. And mm-hmm. so the one thing we can't do when we go to heaven is preach the gospel. And so we have limited number of days. I don't know. It might, for me, it might be 100 days. Maybe it's less. Maybe it's 1,000. But it's like sometimes, you know, we get so caught up in the American dream of like, you know, doing like making sure our kids go to college, that we, you know, buy a house and do nice things for ourselves, that we forget that, you know, our Lord called us to be fishers of men. And, and so like preaching the gospel for me is more than just stating the gospel. And so in a lot of ways, it has to be done with your life example. Mm-hmm. And so like what comes out of our mouth is judged by the actions that we take. And so like we can say Jesus loves you, but if you don't love others, then what, there's no mm-hmm. value of what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's why like I take the stance for, and I don't even want to use that term social justice because that's been so twisted. So I'll just say God's justice, you know, in the world and the felt needs, of people, you know, the poor, the oppressed, you know, the widow, the orphan, you know, the foreigner. And so just, I feel like those are things that justify our faith in Christ. And so, and also caring for the least of these, that it matters, like, you know, paraphrasing James, that, you know, our deeds prove like our faith in a sense, you know? And so, kind of going back, to that whole idea of incarnational solidarity, I learned this through, Joe Coletti's class, and he just had us kind of think about this phrase, which is, if all is not well with you, then all is not well with me. If all is not well with me, then all is not well with you. And also in the Bible in Romans where it says, where Paul states that like mourn with those who mourn and rejoice with those who rejoice, you know? And so like, as disciples of Christ, we have to be able to stand in solidarity with others. You know, we as a church body really have to incorporate the life of the church, that we are together as a body, you know, cooperating as the bride of Christ. Right. And so, yeah, just kind of standing in solidarity. And I'm not talking about standing in solidarity in sin, you know, if people are in sin. No, not at all. But together that we were able to mourn like a person, like loved one that passed away, that we can, you know, help someone overcome the loss of a job, you know, maybe even gain sobriety, you know, help someone gain sobriety or help someone like in their struggle to overcome like a physical or a mental disability, maybe even like heal from a hurtful divorce, you know. Mm-hmm. So like it's basically not turning a blind eye to like the poor inequities, injustice, and not being okay with it either, you know, and not being silent about it. So I think that's kind of like what God's put on my heart, how to live, how to represent Christ, how to be his ambassadors in the world. And not just kind of be caught in my Christian bubble, which is so easy to do. Mm-hmm. And to be caught in the Christian huddle and just only do the huddle things instead of like working out the play that God has for us, you know, our head coach, you know? So yeah, I think that's really kind of like the main thing that God's put on me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing, Andrew. Thank you for always being so transparent too. I think since the men's breakfast that we had and you had the opportunity to speak to us, I think since then I was like, oh man, I just love, it's like a breath of fresh air, just kind of having a perspective and also being so transparent, I think, with even the mistakes, like going to Fuller.
Yeah.
I'm just totally kidding.
Totally. I can be redeemed.
Thanks so much for doing this. So that's it for this episode of IBC Topics. Just thank you guys for listening, and we hope to catch you guys again on the next one. Thanks, guys. Bye.